Well, I'd like to start off today with a quiz. So I prepared this a few weeks ago when the kids were just going back to school, and I thought it's only fair if the adults get a little bit of quiz too and their time. So I'm going to start off with a quiz. You can just kind of do it in your head. It should be pretty straightforward. There are only a couple of questions, actually just three questions. And actually, Mr. Buchanan covered some of this a few weeks ago too, so hopefully it's fresh in everyone's mind. All right, so are you ready for this test? You don't have to say it out loud. You can just kind of keep it in your mind. The first question is, which leader built the Tower of Babel? So which leader built the Tower of Babel? So you might have to kind of rewind your mind's eye a little bit back towards the early part of Genesis. Maybe think back to an old YES lesson that had it on the cover. All right, question number two. If you don't have that one, this one should probably help out. Question number two, was Nimrod a good or an evil ruler? So this is just a yes or no. This is a 50-50 shot. These are the best kind of questions because you got a pretty good shot. Number three, the last question is, was the Tower of Babel ever actually completed? That's the test. That's all of them. Hopefully it wasn't too hard for anyone. Well, I actually did bring with me a copy of the old YES lesson right here. This is one that we had here. This is what inspired this message today. It's actually 11 pages total into the story of Nimrod. And we have a habit of going through some of these, printing them out, going through them with the kids, as no doubt some of you did in the days and years past. And going through this prompted us, Sarah and I, to go back and read the full picture of everything the Bible said about this cornerstone individual. I mean, we had 11 pages here in the YES lesson. Now, this wasn't part of our original quiz, but just out of curiosity, how many times do you think Nimrod is mentioned in the Bible? Any guesses? Could be 100. Luke says 2, 70 million maybe. It's not 70 million. That'd be a horrible guess. Well, if you're like Sarah and I, the answer actually might surprise you. And let's first turn back to Micah chapter 5. Micah chapter 5. This is one of the references here, Micah chapter 5. We're actually going to back up a little bit and start in verse 2. Micah 5, starting in verse 2. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me the one to be ruler in Israel, whose goings forth are from of old, from everlasting. Therefore he shall give them up until the time that she who is in labor has given birth. Then the remnant of his brethren shall return to the children of Israel. And he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, in the majesty of his name, of the Lord his God. And they shall abide, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth. So we've got a lot of context here. Verse 5, and this one shall be peace. When the Assyrian comes into our land and when he treads in our palaces, then we will raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 priestly men. And finally, we get down here to verse number 6, Micah 5, 6. They shall waste with the sword the land of Assyria and the land of Nimrod at its entrances. Thus, he shall deliver us from the Assyrian when he comes into our land and when he treads within our borders. So that's not really so much as a reference as the person per se, but it's talking about Assyria and the cities which Nimrod founded. So we're going to count this one as a reference, but it's kind of brief, so we're being a little bit generous by doing that. There's another mention in 1 Chronicles 1, verse 10. You don't need to turn back there because it's a word-for-word duplicate of Genesis chapter 10. So let's go there, though, Genesis chapter 10, and we'll start in verse 8. This is the meat of the Nimrod story, so we're going to spend the time here and really dive into this story, truly pick apart this lengthy account of Nimrod, this kind of supervillain mega creature that is Nimrod. Genesis chapter 10 and verse 8, Genesis 10 verse 8, Cush begot Nimrod. So if you're keeping score in your notebook, this is number 3. We had Micah 5, we had 1 Chronicles 1, this is number 3, Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one on the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, it's number 4, like Nimrod, number 4, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Verse 10, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and these other places in the land of Shinar. Verse 11, From that land, he went to Assyria and built Nineveh and these other places, verse 12, between Nineveh and Calah, that is the principal city. So those are four total mentions of Nimrod. And to save us time, I'm just going to give you all the rest where he's mentioned so you can write them down. We don't have time to turn there. So you can jot down nothing, because that's it. Those four mentions are the only time Nimrod is mentioned in the whole Bible. Now, by the time we get to chapter 11 of Genesis and the story of the tower and the confusion of the languages, it's not actually explicit who the ruler of the city is at that time. Now, we know that Nimrod founded the city. That's explicit. But he founded at least seven other cities, too, that we know of. And it's just the assumption that he was the ruler of the time of the towers. There's no time references there, so we don't know. It could have been 1 year, could have been 100 years between these two chapters. We don't know. But let's keep going in Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11, verse 1. Now the whole earth had one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone, and they had asphalt, or slime, as it says in the King James, which is great, for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." And then verse 5, "But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built." And then if we drop down to verse 8, Genesis 11, verse 8, "So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city." So we know that they stopped building the city, but the tower itself just says, "which the sons of men had built." And that word "built" is used almost 400 times in the Old Testament, and it's almost perfectly split between building, an action word meaning something that's happening right now, and built, which means something that already happened. So the point that I'm trying to make today is not so much to focus on a construction status of a building that's long since been destroyed by time and a faraway place that has no practical application in our lives today, but rather as a gentle reminder that it's easy to think we know what the Bible says, especially in a section that we don't often read very much or in an area that we haven't taken the time to really dive into. Let's look at a positive example of this in Acts chapter 17. Acts chapter 17, we're going to read verses 10 and 11. Acts 17, verses 10 and 11. This is a great little snapshot of a group of people as they were being called into the truth, and it really gives us a template of something to take into heart. We're jumping into the story, but this is during a trip of the Apostle Paul. He has Silas with him, and he's preaching about Jesus Christ to groups of individuals as he travels. Verse 10 of Acts 17, Acts 17:10. "Then the brethren immediately sent Paul and Silas away by night to Berea. When they arrived, they went into the synagogue of the Jews. These were more fair-minded than those in Thessalonica, and that they received the word with all readiness." And then what'd they do? "They searched the scriptures daily to find out whether these things were so." So Paul and Silas were bringing the context of Jesus Christ and the events that had happened and demonstrating how all of those pieces fit together. And then the Bereans, on their part, took those pieces and fact-checked them. They looked them up. They cross-referenced them. And of course, this was much harder to do back then as it is now. They didn't rely on the scriptures or their memories of their scriptures or their gut feelings or what someone else had told them over the years. They took the message and used the actual words of the Bible as they had it at that time as a comparison. Now, the story of Nimrod is a good example for me because I assumed I knew a great deal of backstory behind this character and his life story. But in reality, when I went back through it with the kids, I was surprised at what the Bible had truly recorded and how much I had added to the story in my own mind. It was a good look at assumptions versus what was literally written down in the Bible. I encourage all of us to ignore my example, both in this and lots of other areas of my life, but instead follow the example of the Bereans and go back and dig through the areas of the Bible that you have not visited in a while. To go back and follow a thread through history, to check in on a family tree and see how they behaved throughout the generations, to reread the actual words from Jesus in the Bible, to go back and visit the prophets and their terrible lives. Let's make it a habit to go back through the stories we think we know and make sure that we truly, truly do.